Chapter 14. The Dean sent Morris down. Mr. Cornwallis was not a severe official, and the boy had a tolerable record, but he could not overlook so gross a breach of discipline.
"And why did you not stop when I called you, Hall?"
Hall made no answer, did not even look sorry. He had a smouldering eye, and Mr. Cornwallis, though much annoyed, realized that he was confronted with a man. In a dead, bloodless way, he even guessed what had happened.
"Yesterday you cut chapel, 4 lectures, including my own translation class, and Hall. You have done this sort of thing before. It's unnecessary to add impertinence, don't you think? Well, no reply. You will go down and inform your mother of the reason, and I shall inform her too. Until you write me a letter of apology, I shall not recommend your readmission to the college in October. Catch the 12 o'clock.
"All right." Mr. Cornwallis motioned him out. No punishment was inflicted on Durham. He had been let off all lectures in view of his tripos, and even if he had been remiss, the dean would not have worried him. The best classical scholar of his year, he had won special treatment. A good thing he would no longer be distracted by Hall. Mr. Cornwallis always suspected such friendships. It was not natural that men of different characters and tastes should be intimate, and although undergraduates, unlike schoolboys, are officially normal, the dons exercised a certain amount of watchfulness and felt it right to spoil a love affair when they could. Clive helped him pack and saw him off. He said little, lest he depressed his friend, who was still in the heroics, but his heart sank. It was his last term, for his mother would not let him stay up a fourth year, which meant that he and Morris would never meet in Cambridge again. Their love belonged to it, and particularly to their rooms, so that he could not conceive of their meeting anywhere else. He wished that Morris had not taken up a strong line with the dean, but it was too late now, and that the sidecar had not been lost. He connected that sidecar with intensities, the agony of the tennis court, the joy of yesterday. Bound in a single motion, they seemed there closer to one another than elsewhere. The machine took on a life of its own, in which they met and realized the unity preached by Plato. It had gone, and when Morris's train went also, actually tearing hand from hand, he broke down, and returning to his room, wrote passionate sheets of despair. Morris received the letter the next morning. It completed what his family had begun, and he had his first explosion of rage against the world.